Broadcasting from our office in Buffalo, New York, this is the Arrive Podcast, the comprehensive guide to U.S. immigration law designed especially for our Canadian neighbors. I'm Jeremy Richards, your host, along with my co-host and business partner, Christine Jerusik. We bring decades of immigration law experience helping Canadians to live and work in the United States. We're here to simplify the complexities of the U.S. immigration process, answer your questions, and provide insights that only experienced professionals can provide. In each episode, Christine and I will delve into legal concepts, share personal narratives, and bring you insightful conversations, all designed to educate, enlighten, and empower you as you navigate the U.S. immigration law landscape. Whether you're preparing to move to the United States for work, studies, love, or if you're just intrigued by U.S. immigration law, the Arrive Podcast is your resource for making the journey clearer, simpler, and more approachable. So we invite you to come on this journey with us. Listen to the Arrive Podcast, follow us on your favorite podcast platforms, and subscribe to the latest episodes as they are released. And if you find what we share helpful, don't keep it to yourself. Feel free to share it with others who might also benefit from the content. Our mission is to assist our friends from the North in successfully navigating their way to live and work in the United States. So sit back, tune in, and get ready to arrive. This is the Arrive Podcast, the U.S. immigration law podcast for Canadians. So in today's episode, we are going to answer questions that were submitted directly through our website that people wanted us to answer during the podcast. And you can do this yourself if you have a question, and we love questions that you want answered live on our podcast. You can just go through our website through the Arrive Podcast section, and there's a link there where it says you want to have a question you want us to ask, and you just click on it and you submit your question and we get it. And if we feel like answering it, we'll answer it. Some of them are too complicated for the podcast, and then if that's the case, then we're just going to refer you to sign up for a consultation. But some of them are basic questions that wouldn't warrant really a consultation to answer them. And we like to answer them on the podcast. So if you do have those questions, feel free to share them with us, and we'd love to discuss them on the podcast and answer those questions for you.
Chances are somebody else out there has the same question, so it's worthwhile for us to go through these.
Yes, good chance. And most of the questions that we answer, that people ask, we've answered many times before. They come up time and again. So the first question that we're addressing today, let's see here. This individual says that they are working in the United States with a community college, and they want to see if they can get a TN visa to work at this college as a vice chancellor. Is that work for TN status? Essentially, they're saying, does this job that I've been offered in the U.S. as a vice chancellor at a, and that could be a college or university, does a vice chancellor position qualify for TN status?
I'm not sure exactly what a vice chancellor at a college does, but it doesn't sound like a professor.
Correct. It's not a professor. So if you're looking down the TN professions list and you're identifying if this is on the list, well, vice chancellor is not on the list.
No.
It's not a TN profession. But what exactly is a vice chancellor? Vice chancellors lead the university's academic and administrative departments. They may serve on several university councils, assist with policy development and academic planning, prepare budgets, and maintain the institution's positive image. Not a TN profession.
No, there's no teaching in there or instruction.
So if this were aligned with a professor,
right,
or a teacher at a college level, now it's important to understand that. So TN profession is at a college level. You can't be a high school teacher to qualify for TN status. But you are, if you are teaching at a college or university as a professor or an instructor, then that does qualify for TN status. However, this role as a vice chancellor would be a managerial level role. Your administration, that is not a TN profession. And it'd be very difficult to even attempt to make this a TN profession in any shape or form. This is an H-1B profession. Now, the good thing here is this individual, all they have to do is apply for an H-1B. So colleges and universities are what are called CAP exempt institutions for an H-1B visa. That means they can hire staff anytime throughout the year without having to go through the pesky H-1B visa lottery, which is going on right now. And then my guess it's going to conclude today, but USCIS hasn't officially announced that. So you can skip that entire lottery process if it's a college or university, because they are CAP exempt institutions, and they can apply for an H-1B for you at any time throughout the year. So this individual could go back to the college and say, hey, this doesn't qualify for TN, but it would qualify for an H-1B. Can you help me with that?
Yeah, and they have a PhD, so there's no question of their qualification there.
Yeah, this is clearly an H-1B role. At a college, it would qualify for an H-1B. All right, next one. This is an individual says, hey, I just want my child to go to school in the U.S. What we can do, what can we do to get my child to go to school in the United States?
But typically this is accompanied by, and not only does my child need to go to school in the United States, but I need to stay with them in the United States while they attend school.
So this one is specifically asking about high school because they want the transition from high school to university to be easier. Which makes sense. And I agree with that thought process. It would make that a little bit easier. And a lot of parents do call us, or even individuals that are going through their education right now, and they want to know what can they do to come to the U.S. just because they want to go to school. Well, there's already visas available for that. So if you're coming to go to school in the United States, they have what's called an F-1 visa. An F-1 visa is for students in the United States. And a lot of high schools have international student programs as well as colleges.
And let's just be clear here. We're talking about private high schools have not those public. Kind of programs. Right. The public high schools do not have those programs typically.
But they do facilitate exchange visitors. Mm-hmm. Most of them do. I know the high school my kids go to, they do have exchange students that foreign exchange students that come and they were able to attend a year of school here in the United States.
Right, but they wouldn't be studies. Graduating from that high school, and that correct. Wouldn't facilitate their transfer to a U.S. college. Correct. So
this one would be, like you said, you'd have to go to a private high school that does facilitate that. They would get a student visa that would allow them to go to high school there. Then they could transition into college with the same student visa that's for college-level courses as well. And you raise a good point when you're talking about this. Most parents don't just want to send their kid to the United States to go to high school without parents.
Yeah, they want to come with the child. But that F-1 visa doesn't have any there's no dependent status for parents.
But there is an exception for a visitor visa. For a minor child, where in some cases they do allow parents to come to the U.S. as on a B visa is what it's called, while their minor child attends high school. So there are some exceptions for that. Is it possible? It is. We typically do not deal with student visas whatsoever, though. That's not something that we're in the practice of doing. We guide people to the institution where they want to go to school and work with their academic advisors and their international departments when it comes to students and studying in the United States. But the answer is there are student visas available. You have to find an institution that's willing to sponsor it. And there are exceptions where some parents can come if it is a minor child to be here with them. So it is possible. Next question.
I'm a Canadian citizen on a TN visa as a nurse in Hawaii. I'm wondering if I'd have to fly back to Canada if I was going to change employers and apply for a new TN at the border, or can this be done from Hawaii? I'm also wondering what this process looks like.
So, good question. Can it be done in Hawaii?
It certainly can. There's no reason why you can't do a extension of your status, your TN status, while you remain in the United States.
Through USCIS, right?
Yes,
you have
right?
to file yeah. by mail.
Yeah.
So the employer would have, in this case, and it's important to clarify that the TN visa holder or the employee cannot do this process on their own. An employee cannot file to extend or change their status in the United States individually. The employer must do this. And there are forms that employers have to complete and mail in along with supporting evidence to USCIS. But yes, it can be done by mail while remaining in the United States without having to leave the United States. Next question. How to transition from TN visa with a specific company to another TN visa with a different company? So this person is saying they want to change employers on their TN visa here in the United States. So how can they do that? How do you change your employer when you're on a TN?
There's a couple ways.
And
similar to the last question.
Yeah, it's very simple. It's both ways. It's the same process, right?
Yep. Changing an employer or extending with the same employer is the same process.
You can do it by mail with USCIS, or you can do it at a port of entry. Either way, whatever way you want to do it. Now, one of the important things to discuss with this question as well is this person obviously understands that TN status is employer specific. So you cannot work for a new employer until you have approval to do so. Your TN is not blanket authorization to work for anybody you want in the United States. It's only to work for the employer and for the employer, for the profession that you were approved for. That's it.
And unlike the H-1B, the filing of the application doesn't give you authorization to start work with that new employer. You actually have to wait until that petition is approved before you can start that new employment.
Yes, a key distinction. So you have to get approval before starting work. So very important. So same process. You can file by mail and it's called the change of employer application. And again, the employee can't do that. The
new employer
has to do that. Yep. Or leave the U.S. and come back through a port of entry. Now, I'm going to circle back to that last question, the Hawaiian one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a common question we get, because I think that individual was kind of asking the question as to whether or not there's a place you can just go within the United States at an airport or another location
in
person and apply.
Yeah, a service like that.
And we get that question a lot because it is a little bit confusing if you think about the process. Because let's say you fly into the U.S. and you came from Billy Bishop and you flew into Newark. You get inspected at the Newark airport when you land in the United States. So they are processing you here in the U.S. for that TN upon entry, not before you depart. Most of the time you depart, you're inspected before you leave, and then you enter the U.S.
If you're flying in from Canada, most airports have that pre-flight inspection.
Yeah. Or at the border, they're inspecting you before you cross, right?
Yeah.
But there are some instances where you're doing an international flight and you're inspected upon entry to the U.S. That airport.
I mean, most people who are flying into the United States don't have the opportunity to attend a pre-clearance airport, right? There's only
Europe,
a few of them around the world.
Wherever it is, yeah.
So most people flying into the U.S. are inspected upon entry.
Yep. So in those cases, it can be a little confusing because if you did fly into a place like that and they inspected you upon arrival, then you could be under the impression that you could just go back to that airport or wherever it was and reapply right there on the spot. You can't do that. You have to be an arriving international passenger to go through that inspection process. You can't show up at an airport and say, hey, I just want to go over there to the border people and get my TN status extended. You can't do that.
Right. And so when we talk about making a TN application at the border, we're not talking about just going to the border to make an application there. We're actually talking about making an entry to the United States and asking them to admit you in a certain status, in TN status, upon that entry.
And we're actually looking out our window right now at the Peace Bridge, backed up with trucks.
it's
busy. It is a nice, clear, beautiful day here in Buffalo, which isn't common. But if you were to go to the port of entry right there that we're looking at, the Peace Bridge, and show up on the U.S. side, and I've seen people do this when we used to go there all in person, they will tell you that before we can inspect you, they'll ask, are you coming from the U.S. or Canada right now? If you say you're coming from the U.S., they can't inspect you. Because you're already in the U.S., they will make you depart, drive across the bridge to Canada, and they actually have a special section here on the Peace Bridge where it's cut out, and you just flip a U-turn. You don't even have to go fully into Canada to do it. And they turn you right back around. The Canadian border officers will turn you right back around to come to back to the U.S. and then re-enter, which seems kind of silly because you were just at, you could have just driven to the port of entry.
Right.
But they make you depart so that you are seeking entry.
Right.
You have to be seeking entry to the U.S. to be inspected and admitted in TN status. So you can't just drive to an airport. You can't just drive to a port of entry. You have to actually depart and re-enter for them to inspect you. So important clarification there. So going back to that, no, you cannot do that. There are special, there are certain procedures you have to file or you have to follow either by mail or by departing and re-entering the United States.
All right, I'll read this one. Are we Canadians? We are Canadians who own a home in Florida. We're interested in flagpoling and hope to come back to Florida mid-October, return to Ontario in January for 1 week, and then return to Florida until mid-May. We have strong ties to Canada, and although we don't own a home there, we do rent a seasonal lot for 6 months and can approve payment. We're still feeling worried about getting stopped at the border because we drive through Buffalo or Detroit. Anything that you can provide to help us feel more secure?
Get this question all the time.
We do.
Canadians want to know, how long can I stay in the U.S. without getting in trouble?
It's the snowbird question.
So this really comes down to the question as to how long can you stay in the United States as a Canadian visitor without violating your status? And if you stay here for a certain period of time, how long do you have to stay in Canada before returning, right? So the general rule, and if you look it up, CBP talks about it, and it's on their website, and it's also all over our website where we talk about this as well. You're allowed to be in the United States, and this is where it can get a little tricky. 6 months per visit is how they define it, per visit. So you can come to the United States for 6 months at a time. This person is asking, well, if we do that.
They want to know if they can come for 3 months, go back to Canada for a week, and then come back down for 5 months if they're going to have any problem being readmitted to the United States. I would say that they would not probably have a problem being readmitted for that five-month visit at the beginning of that visit. But if they plan to travel back to Florida within 12 months of returning after that five-month trip, they are probably going to have a hard time.
So after that first three-month visit, you've only been here 3 months.
Right.
Right? You're not even close to your 6 months. They could question you, though.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, what were you down there for 3 months, and you were only in Canada for a week. Why are you going back so fast?
They could, yep.
But, again, most of the time, they're not going to bother you unless they're under the suspicion that you're working or actually living here and not vacationing.
Mm-hmm.
Then it could cause concern, and they could refuse your entry. But after 3 months, yeah, they're likely to readmit you, as long as you can convince to them that you're just coming down for another short vacation.
And so, but if you did come back down and spent a total of 8 months in a 12-month period,
then
so
try to come back again.
Then try to come back again before 12 months have passed, you're going to have a hard time. Especially when you own a home in Florida and you're only renting a place in Canada, they're going to ask
if
they get into the details, you could have a more serious problem on your hand.
Yeah, because if you own in the U.S. and not in Canada, then it shows like you're establishing your ties here, not to Canada.
Right. And what ends up happening, if that did happen, say you were willing to take the risk, and a lot of people do, right? They want to spend their time in Florida, and they don't want to be back in Canada for that cold weather. They take the risk, and then they come back down. And what ends up happening is they're brought into secondary inspection and asked to provide proof of their ties to their home country. And those proof of ties can look like many different documents. A lot of them are, you know,
bank
can
statements,
be ownership,
health insurance,
yeah, leases, ownership of home,
revolving accounts. There's a lot of things.
There's a lot of different optional documents that you can provide to prove that, but you're really leaving it up to the discretion of the officer to make a determination as to where your strongest ties are. And if you can't prove to them that you're coming back to Canada within that 6 month visit that they're going to admit you for, they're not going to let you in.
And they could say stay out for a year. They could say stay out till we let you come back in again.
They usually give you a list of documents that they want to see when you come back, but you can't just show up the next day with that list of documents.
No, it says, and the actual list they give you says want 6 months of.
Yeah, six months of mortgage statements, 6 months of lease, 6 months, yes.
They want to make sure you've reestablished your ties to Canada if they do flag you for that before you show up again.
Yep. So I would be careful. If you want to maintain your ability to visit the United States for the winter, make sure you stick to your 6 months in any 12-month period. Don't give them any reason to question you. You know, we know it gets cold in Canada and sometimes it's not warm before the end of May, but you might just have to spend a couple cooler months in Canada to maintain your ability to go down next fall.
Yeah, and balance it. Go back and forth. Spread your 6 months out.
Yeah.
But in the end, could they admit you? Could you be here for 6 months, leave, and then come back in and give you another 6 months? They could.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen.
And I would just say, you know what, be careful. If you're getting close to your time and, you know, you think maybe you're a little over, you're close, the officer could question you, travel with those documents so that you can convince them, hey, listen, I'm just coming down for 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 6 months, whatever it is, and prove to them that you have plans to return to Canada. Sometimes a return plane ticket, if you're not driving, can be enough.
Yeah. And in the end, you hit a lot of the important factors here. But we run into a lot of Canadians that really want to spend the majority of their time in the U.S.
Yeah.
And they don't have the status to do it. Being a Canadian visitor does not grant you that ability. It does not grant you the ability to work in the United States and does not grant you the ability to make the U.S. your permanent residence. So be careful. Don't do anything that's going to change your ties from Canada to the United States. I always explain it as a balancing act, that there's a scale, and that scale better tip to Canada. Mm-hmm. If that scale starts tipping to the United States, that's when you're going to have problems, not only in your time in the U.S., but also your ties. If you have your bank accounts, your cars, your house, everything in the United States, and you don't have anything left in Canada, or you just have a rental or whatever it is, well, you just, that those scale is tipped to the U.S.
Yeah.
And we see people in unfortunate situations where that scale has tipped to the U.S. and then the border officers realize it. And guess what? They get refused entry to the U.S. They have everything in the U.S.
Yeah.
They don't have to let you back in.
I have a home there. All my cars are there. My pets are there. And I can't get back in. That's a problem.
So if you are a Canadian and you're doing this, be careful. Don't press your luck. If your plans are to immigrate to the United States to work, to live, and you want to make this your permanent residence, do it the right way. A visitor visa or coming as a Canadian visitor is not the right way to do it.
Right.
All right. Next up. I love this one. This one said that our website was incorrect when it's not, but that's another story. It makes me laugh when people try to fact check. Okay, you can, if something's wrong though, if you do see something that's incorrect on our website, absolutely tell us so that we can fix it. We don't want any misinformation on there. And sometimes stuff does go out of date. And I think at last look, we have like 700 pages on our website. So there could be something on there that's old. And if there is, let us know. We'd be glad to update it. But this person was asking about administrative processing. We've talked about that before. So administrative processing is when you go to the consulate or embassy to get a visa to enter the United States. And it could be an immigrant visa, such as to get a green card, or it could be a work visa. It could be an investor visa. It could be any type of visa that you're getting at the consulate. If you're Canadian, you're typically only going to the consulate to get either an immigrant visa, because you're coming to get a green card through a spouse or a U.S. family member, or you are getting a e-visa and to invest in the United States. And sometimes in that process, you can be put into what's called administrative processing. And that's where the consulate is doing additional due diligence before they issue you a visa. This individual is asking whether or not you can travel to the United States while you're in administrative processing. Answer is yes, you can. If, and there's an if, if you still have an underlying visa or status that allows you to enter the United States and that has not been revoked. Case in point, you have a client right now who's in administrative processing, waiting for his immigrant visa to come to the United States through marriage to a U.S. citizen. Entered a couple weeks ago. Case still is in administrative processing. The exact situation of this question entered as a Canadian visitor. Why? because he was able to show to the border officers that he's just visiting, that his case is still pending with the consulate, and he's going to return once it clears administrative processing to complete the process, was able to enter as a visitor. So if you have an underlying visa in your passport, this still remains valid. It's at the discretion of the border at this point. It's not Department of State that determines this. When you show up at the border always has discretion. And I'll say always has the discretion to admit you in whatever status is in your passport. They don't have to readmit you. If they determine that you're not admissible to the United States, even with a visa, they could say no. So if you're administrative processing, you still have a valid visa, or as a Canadian, and this is what we run into most times, is Canadians that want to visit.
That are visa exempt.
That are visa exempt. Then you show up as you always would as a Canadian. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have any reason to believe you're going to come here permanently or work or do something you're not supposed to,
right,
then they can readmit you.
So in, you know, the opposite of that situation you were talking about is somebody, for example, who may have applied for an E2 visa at the consulate. Sometimes those get put into administrative processing, and it can take quite a while to get that resolved. We've had plenty of clients in that situation in the past. And while that application is still pending in administrative processing, perhaps you need to visit the United States for a reason that's unrelated to your business. I've seen plenty of people being admitted at the border in that situation. They've got a pending employment-based E2 visa, you know, in administrative processing, get admitted as a visitor. But I have also seen the other side where people are coming down and their business is floundering because they're waiting for their visa to come and work on it. Maybe they don't have somebody here in the U.S. who's managing it yet. And I've seen them get denied entry, and the officers don't believe that they're not coming down to manage a business that they don't have authorization to manage yet because they're in administrative processing. Yep. So that can happen as well.
Yeah, and there's a key distinction there as to why those would be admitted and wouldn't be admitted, right? If you have a viable business that's operating on its own, whether or not you're here on that e-visa, then they're likely to readmit you because you can show you're not going to be working. But the other one, if you don't have employees and staff yet, come on.
Well, this one they had employees, but they had no management level hired yet because they were planning to do that once they got their E2. And the officer was reluctant. They eventually got in.
So you got to do some convincing.
For a very short period of time, in order to resolve a key business issue, but they were probably not supposed to do that because they weren't authorized.
Yep. So the answer to that question, yes. If you still have underlying status or ability to enter the United States, so here most of the time we're talking about a Canadian visa-exempt visitor, then you're able to do that with a pending case in administrative processing, as long as you can demonstrate to the border that you're not going to violate that status as a visitor. All right, last question.
I am a TN visa, working for a bank as a computer systems analyst. I want to know if I can take a side job as an investment and insurance advisor. I'm not going to be paid a salary. I'll be provided incentives, and it's going to be a 1099 tax filing. Well, so I would just say no, because it sounds like the investment insurance advisor is probably not a computer systems analyst.
Well, not only that, they're saying side employer. Job. So when people say side job,
different employer.
Yeah. And they're asking if they can do it with their current TN. Can they take a side job? They're not asking this situation, not asking for a new TN. They're saying under my TN, and we see this question a lot. And the other questions along the same line that we see are, can I do Uber? Can I do DoorDash?
I had one, a client wanted, she was a musician on the side, and she wanted to play some gigs
in the U.S. music
while
lessons.
I'm here on a TN.
Whatever, right? Yeah. Even if it's just a gig here or there, or an Uber ride here or there, or in this case, this is a straight up job as an insurance advisor.
Yeah.
So the answer is a hard no. You can't do that unless you get a new TN that would authorize you to do it.
Right. And I think the distinction they're making here is they think because it's a 1099 tax filing, that they're a contractor and therefore it's not employment. Be aware that the definition of employment in immigration is very different from the definition of employment under the IRS rules.
Very different.
So you 1099, W-2, it doesn't matter. You're still employed. And that's still...
Well, and you're raising another question right there. You're answering another question that, people have. They ask, well, I'm on a TN. Can I be W-2 or 1099?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No.
It's the same thing.
Right.
You're employed.
From an immigration perspective, it's the same thing, even though from a tax perspective, it's very different.
So, yeah, being 1099 doesn't make you exempt from TN status. And that's what this person in the end is asking.
Right. So could, the question is, can you even just come to the U.S. and work as a contractor? Yes, but you need the same authorization that you would need if you were W-2.
Yes. And you, and that also brings up another question about TN status, and that's self-employment. You cannot, however, be self-employed. But 1099 status alone does not indicate self-employment by any means.
Right.
We've had many employees here with us over the years that have worked on a 1099 basis and a W-2 basis. They're all still considered our employees for visa purposes and also for labor law purposes as well.
Right.
So, yeah, that's actually a really good question. So, 1099 or W-2, you're still an employee.
Mm-hmm.
You're still working in the United States for immigration purposes. You still need visa status to do it. Side gig, yes, if you get another TN that covers a side gig.
Right.
Side gig with the current TN and not adding a new one, no, you cannot.
Right. So if this person said, can I get a side job as a computer systems analyst for another employer?
Absolutely.
And I'm going to be a 1099 tax filing. We would say, yeah, you just need a new TN.
Correct.
But investment and insurance advisor is not a TN occupation.
It usually falls under the big no-no of financial analyst type of role, and that gets...
Well, it's just not on the TN list. So even if you were to apply for a TN for this role, it's unlikely to be approved.
Yep. Not going to fly.
Yeah.
So good questions, though. Hopefully today, if you were listening, you were able to hear some questions that you might have had in your head that you wanted answered. If you had a question that we did not cover today, we'd love to hear it. We'd love to cover it on a future episode of our podcast. If you were listening today, thank you for tuning in. Let your friends and family and other individuals out there that are looking for advice on U.S. immigration, let them know that we're here and that we're discussing U.S. immigration for Canadians on the Rive podcast. Thank you for listening. Have a great day.